and welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Alliwell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we are checking in with the Vanity Fair Hollywood issue versus the W Magazine shit show. So that'll be exciting. The discourse is burning.
It is.
We're doing a cringe mode Cinderella story. Very excited for that.
Great
and
stuff.
Yes, and then also a couple unanswerable questions that are music related. So stay tuned.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter, guys, at teatime_33. And on Instagram, we're at teatimepod. Our Instagram is popping. Not to brag, it's at the helm of Amelia. So God bless her. Follow that immediately. Okay, before we get into the show, let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear are so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
All right, Tea Time's checking in with a couple different things. Obviously, the biggest headline we're starting with first. Amelia, go ahead.
Yes. So horrible. Lady Gaga's dog, she's in Italy right now filming, I think, the Gucci movie. But her dog walker went on a late night walk with the dogs, her three French bulldogs, and not only was he shot four times, they took two of her dogs, and the other dog ran away before she could get kidnapped. But now Lady Gaga has put up a $500,000 reward for the dogs to get them back. No questions asked. But I just obviously feel so horrible. Horrible for the dog walker. Horrible for Lady Gaga and those poor dogs. I just can't. It's wild.
Yeah, I just saw pictures of her in Italy when she was like entering this building, and she looked just incredible. She's like brunette now. She had this beautiful like flowing caftan, and I literally to myself was like, oh my God, like Lady Gaga like seems so happy and healthy. Yeah. Like she's in this great era of her life. She's really thriving. And then literally that same day, it was like Lady Gaga's bulldog stolen, shot the dog walker. I was like, Jesus, let God. This woman live. God.
It's so sad, so horrible. Scary for everyone involved. I know she said no questions asked, but I hope that they really get to the bottom of this, obviously. Yeah. I've actually heard that this is going on a bit in Los Angeles. So if you're there and in that area with these kind of dogs, just be careful. But I hope that I hope they find the dogs. I hope that the dog walker recovers fully. And then they find the people, because I know she doesn't want no questions asked because she wants them all returned. But I would like to ask some questions after they get returned,
yes.
I feel like.
Yeah. Justice for the bulldogs and the bulldog walker.
Yeah.
Yes.
Next one.
Okay. In, you know, it's like award show season finally. It's a very weird award season, partially because it's all sort of online, remote. Also because the timeline is very different. Today, as we're recording this, it's like the four-year anniversary of like the insane Moonlight La La Land Oscar show, which like we're not even anywhere near the Oscars. The Golden Globes are this weekend. It's just like all feels very strange. And this week, the two sort of big celebrity like award show magazine issues came out. One of them is the like iconic classic Vanity Fair Hollywood issue, which we've talked about. I think we talk about every year it comes out, like who's on it is always a big deal. They've really done better with diversity in recent years, which is always a big conversation. And I was like ready to talk about the Vanity Fair issue. I was ready to like go over the whole thing, like talk about, you know, the photo shoot. It's very like whimsical, colorful. But the Vanity Fair issue kind of got its like its spotlight stolen this year, for better or worse, mm-hmm. by the W Magazine Performances of the Year issue. And that's because the photographs were done by Jürgen Teller for W Magazine. And Jürgen Teller is like, he is this like fashion, he calls himself like the anti-fashion photographer, which I do think some of his work is really good. You know, he does like this very real sort of just like realistic situations, not that much editing. But he did all these W Magazine covers and he put these celebrities on the streets of LA, like on the fucking corner of like Fairfax, and was just like sit on the street, took two pictures of them. Literally, Riz Ahmed tweeted and said, "This W Mag shoot was the fastest of my life. 20 seconds, two clicks. Jürgen Teller is the OG." And he's like on a folding chair next to a tree, next to like a 2002 Toyota Camry. And amazing. It's like, okay, you look like Riz Ahmed, so like you look great. But people started noticing and being like, I'm sorry, like these are not high fashion. These are not like, how much did this man get paid to take two pictures of these people on iPhones? So yeah. It of course immediately became a meme. People were tweeting out pictures of Ben Affleck getting his Dunkin' Donuts and being like, you're Jürgen Teller for W Magazine. Somebody was like, I have never met Steven Yeun, but I know this is the worst thing that has ever happened to Steven Yeun, because he's sitting on a folding chair in the middle of the street looking as the worst probably Steven Yeun has ever looked. No. He's a very handsome guy. Like, I love that this is his worst, but like, he just looks pissed off. It's like one of those outtakes where like, if your friend took this of you, you would never post it on Instagram. Right. And again, like these are stunning people and they're wearing cool clothes. So like, they've got that going for them. But like, some of them are in trees. Some of them are laying on the streets of LA, which like, I don't want to do that. Like, sure. Any day. He used the same tree for a lot of them. And the internet is
West Hollywood tree, though. It's everywhere.
It is. And they've got like, he just didn't edit any. No, like, there are people in the background. There are cars in the background. There's trash in the background. So people just turned it into a meme. They started taking like the worst pictures of celebrities. They have a picture of Saoirse Ronan at a McDonald's. They've got the like, the picture of Demi Lovato where like people thought it was a different person. And just people like taking out their trash. And this just turned into a meme. So yeah, I mean, I respect, and honestly, compared to the Vanity Fair issue, which is like very over edited, like they don't really look like people, which like, it's very glamorous, which is great. That's what I want. But it is a little bit like over photoshopped. I just would like somewhere in the middle.
Sorry,
I want
the
glamorous, you know, celebrities in the great clothes. But I also would not like to see them like next to a no street parking sign.
Right. And this is
reasonable.
Right. This is art. And I don't claim to know or understand high art in any way. Anytime like the Met Gala theme comes out, I'm always confused. I don't really get how anyone interprets that theme. So there's something I'm missing personally with these photos. And there's some higher level of understanding. But all I see is like Tom Holland like crouched like he's going to take a shit next to this West Hollywood tree that I see in my real life anyway, that always has like human feces underneath the leaves and trash and like who knows what. So
I need to be transported in this time, you know, like I don't want like the realism. I just don't want it right now. I want like if you're, and Lakeith Stanfield, for example, is in both of these shoots. In the Vanity Fair one, he's riding a unicorn in a yellow suit and like that's what I want. Like right now, that's what I want. We're reaching the second March of quarantine. Like, I just don't want to see him next to trash on the street. I want to see him riding a unicorn.
Agreed.
That's how I feel.
Couldn't have said it better.
Thank you.
I also have another need. I need some big celeb news. I need someone to do maybe like a surprise relationship or another surprise pregnancy, because essentially, very recently, Tea Time has decided to move our recording days to Fridays because we felt that we were missing some great headlines and the crucial news that could not be talked about. Felt like we were missing a lot. So I don't know why I thought this, but I thought that because we pushed it a day, like suddenly like an entire crop of news that we've never seen before would come out. And I feel really disappointed that it did not. I have been scouring the internet because you guys know, like there are some weeks where not a lot happens and you still have to do it and you still have to talk about things. Okay, so here are headlines I found. Thank God we recorded this morning because this is what is in the news in the last 24 hours. Just Jared is reporting Brad Pitt wears his hair in a tiny ponytail for day at the office. Oh, and you give Just Jared that click and you fucking walk into this article. And it's Brad Pitt, a very blurry photo of him, and this teeny tiny blue bun in the back of his head. And that's it. And
like, I'm going to be honest. I do care about this. I do.
Okay, fine. Let me hit you.
I don't need to talk about it, but I do care about that.
Okay, okay, fine. Let me hit you the next one. Okay. Also, Just Jared.
Just new dad, Jared coming through.
New dad, Garrett Hedlund, hits the golf course in Los Angeles. Okay? Okay. And then you're like, maybe something happened here at this golf course. The leading line is 36-year-old actor, new dad, chatted on the phone while arriving at a golf course on Wednesday afternoon.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. I got two more and I'm saving the best for last.
Okay.
Okay, Us Weekly, I thought they would do better because they're always talking about something. Us Weekly discovered that we found Claire Crawley's fluffy leopard jacket on sale at Zappos.
Wow.
Thank God. Thank God they did.
Oh my Jesus God. Christ. And then the award obviously goes to TMZ. This is actually from last Thursday night, but I had to include it anyway. This is the most egregious celeb headline I've ever read. TMZ is reporting Zach Braff's dog. I don't want no scrubs, but I do want that ball. And the article is Zach Braff taking his dog to the dog park.
Wow. Did Harvey Levin write that one himself? I mean,
iconic.
Maybe.
Thank God we switched to Fridays. And really, last week, the big problem was that we recorded and then later in the day, Kim and Kanye got divorced and we're like, fuck.
So true. So we need to record on Friday evenings and or do a live instead.
There we go. That's the solution.
All right, let's keep moving. Next category is always our mashup now of relationship news, a little bit of not worth the tea, and then a little bit of social media. Amelia, take it away.
Right. So, you know, I guess spring is emerging right now, which is exciting. For those of you who play Animal Crossing, you've noticed that it's no longer winter time. There is no more snow on the ground. We've got kind of a mushy, dark green covering your island. Well, what all this is, I'm trying to say is that, you know, the animals are coming out. I think there's going to be more wildlife news. And specifically, I wanted to talk about Martha Stewart's journey, if you will, with a swan over the weekend, this past weekend. So Martha Stewart, iconic lifestyle lady, you know, she's Snoop Dogg's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know who she is. Anyway, she took to Instagram over the weekend to warn the masses of a killer swan on the loose. She posted a photo with what appears to be a mute swan, which is, I guess, a species of swan. And she said, I have searched iMages, I think she meant four images, of swans, and this looks like a mute swan. Can anyone verify? If so, there's a report that a mute swan killed a kayaker on a pond. Oh! Which... What? Yes, a little scary. I didn't know that swans could kill people. And I just love how she just...
Are we sure?
Well, then I Googled it. And apparently there were swans that killed a kayaker in 2012 on a lake in Chicago. And then there was a mute swan in England who killed up to 20 swans by drowning them in 2018. Yes. So, but I couldn't find any news on a swan killing a kayaker in what I thought would be like Connecticut or something. So very strange. But then she posted a follow-up post on the same day with the caption, "The unexpected visitor swan behaving rather well in the confinement of our chicken coops. Goose enclosure. He or she seems comfortable and calm. Looks more and more like a mute swan." So she has these two different posts. One of them saying there's an alleged killer swan on the loose. Beware. The other one saying, well, now this, I guess, killer swan, this mute killer swan is now at my farm and he seems like a really nice guy.
She's going to pick a side.
She's got to pick a side. Is this the same swan? I don't know. Martha Stewart, you need to update us. You can't just leave us hanging. And also maybe call animal control because this swan is apparently a murderer.
Sonic now. It's so hard to keep up with.
I know. This reminds the first picture, the swan has like this evil red glow around it. And it reminds me of the killer rabbit from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where they travel to kill this beast and like it comes out and it's just a fucking rabbit. That's the vibe that I'm getting from this killer swan.
I don't blame you.
It's ominous. I wouldn't want to fuck with it, but.
And now there's no resolution. So I hate to leave you all hanging, but watch out for a swan.
We need answers. Jesus.
We do.
Next is I want to get your guys' opinions on something that made headlines early this week, but it is the new line of USPS vehicles. And I think they are so cute. They look like they belong in an animated movie. I don't know if you guys have seen these, but they went all around the internet and a lot of people loved them and a lot of people hated them because they look, again, like very cartoonish. But I think they're quite cute and I would like to keep them. And I think they'll provide more joy than the current USPS vehicles. They're going to unveil and hit the roads in 2023. So we have a very long time before we see these things in action. But they're so cute. Have you guys seen these?
Yeah, I love them. I have to tell you, my dad works for the post office on Sundays and drives a mail truck and delivers packages. And the first time my mom and I saw him in like the regular mail truck, we laughed for like 10 minutes because like you don't think about how stupid those trucks look until like you see someone you know driving one and they're like all hunched over on the wrong side with the open door and you're like, this is hilarious. So I saw these pictures. Everyone was making fun of them. They were like, I've never seen a truck that needs bangs before because it looks like it has like a five head. I need them. I know that they won't issue them in Lafayette, Indiana anytime soon, but like I just need my dad to drive one of these. It would be so funny.
Also, great news for him. They also have like a big new slew of like technical updates, which is really great. There's 360 degree cameras, traction control, you know, more carrying capacity. Anyway, this is good news for the world. I feel like we need to hold on to these pieces and just hold them dear because they don't come around too much.
So true.
All right, next one.
All right, two social media things for you, two Twitter things for you. Twitter this week, Twitter overreacts to everything. That's just like what it runs on these days. And so when a rumor spread of Emma Watson retiring from acting, Twitter just exploded this week. Everyone was like, Emma Watson built my childhood. And without her acting, like I will cease to be as a human. And this is all based on the fact that the Daily Mail reported that her rep said that her acting career is, quote, currently dormant, which I guess like in the industry is like how people say that they're done. Since Twitter exploded and everyone was talking about it, they since sort of corrected the record and they were like, her social media accounts are dormant, but her career isn't, whatever that means. That's what Liz Kelly likes to say. But people were like losing it. They were like, here are Emma Watson's most iconic roles. It was like Hermione Granger, fucking Belle from Beauty and the Beast. So I was like, that's not her role, really. The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Don't know the name of that girl in that movie. So how iconic can it be? And then fucking Meg from Little Women, which I was like, really? Like, if you think about it, Emma Watson retired from acting like halfway through the Little Women movie. So I just don't see what all the hubbub is about.
Also, those just are all her roles. Kind of. Like she hasn't been in too much.
That's her whole IMDb page.
Right.
This tweet got like 30,000 like favorites or whatever on Twitter. God. I was like, guys, she didn't invent acting. I mean, it's fine. I don't want to be like an Emma Watson hater. I'm glad that she's living her life. She's just like with her boyfriend, like hanging out in LA. That's fine. But people were like just absolutely ready to throw away Hollywood now that Emma Watson's done, supposedly. And I think we need to relax. Wow.
Yeah, I'm one of the few people that like Emma Watson as an actress. I know used to you get do. A lot
that
of shit in
why
the
I
office.
Picked this.
But no, if she wants to go. And also, I have never claimed and have never thought that she is a pioneer of the craft. But maybe I'm not seeing exactly what all these other people are seeing.
Yes.
Bizarre.
All right. And the other big Twitter news of the week is that they announced that they're going to allow people to put a paywall on their tweets. They're going to be called super follows. Basically, it's like Twitter ripping off OnlyFans and also like newsletters a little bit. Content creators can charge people $5 a month to allow them to see specialty content. It'll be like a community group, subscription to a newsletter, could be like a badge indicating your support and like seeing special tweets. I wanted to ask you, because people were like, I would never do this. Is there literally anyone in the world that you would pay to follow on Twitter? You can say me if that's how you feel.
Amelia? I would say no. And if someone that I really liked and was like, oh, wow, they're so funny and like informative, charge people or mm-hmm. said, hey, I'm going to charge people, I would unfollow them immediately.
Right. It's bad vibes.
It is.
It is bad vibes. And so much of that stuff is free and has been only because, you know, Instagram, every public person has some kind of public profile. It would feel weird to like backtrack now. But I mean, I cannot think of a single human being on earth that I would pay this for. But I guess super fans and like depending on the content, I don't even know what exclusive content. I mean, I get it when you have a platform like OnlyFans or things that you want to keep like more private outside. But mm-hmm. what kind of tweets do you tweet that are like extra special?
And everything makes its way onto Twitter in the end anyway. You know right. what I mean? Like one person sure. screenshots it and then it's everywhere. So like, I just don't see the future in that. People were saying like, I hope that this person I don't like puts his tweets behind a paywall so I don't have to see the tweets anymore, which is I think the way to go. Yeah. I want everyone else to be paying for other people's tweets that I have right. to see fewer tweets.
Right. While we're here, mm-hmm. how are fleets going? Because we talked about that a while ago. I've not dead. Heard a single thing. Oh.
Dead. Haven't looked wow. at them in okay. months. Amelia?
Yeah, I mean, no, I haven't. I think I posted a picture of Guy Fieri and a dog, and that was about it. So that's the extent of my experience.
That sums it up.
You tried.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
All right, let's move on to the next category. It's cringe mode, a Cinderella story. Mm. We're moving through the Cinderella canon. Who knows if we'll keep this up. but for now, we're doing the 2004 Hilary Duff rendition of a Cinderella story. The plot, Kate?
Hilary Duff is, you know, the Cinderella of this story.
Yeah.
And it starts out, she's young. She lives in the San Fernando Valley. And it, unlike some other Cinderella renditions, I have some things to say about this. It starts out with like her happy childhood with her father, who then dies in a tragic earthquake, which I just like could have done without. I'm like, we don't need to get to know the dad before he dies. He used to run a diner. When he dies, the diner and everything else goes to her evil stepmother. Obviously, like classic. Hilary Duff, you know, is now a high school student. She wants to go to Princeton, and she has been aim chatting this guy that she met in like a Princeton chat room, who is Chad Michael Murray. But she doesn't know because he goes to her high school. They dress up in costume. They meet at like homecoming, which is for some reason in costumes, which is not a thing. They meet. He doesn't recognize her because that's how these things go. He ends up finding out that it's her. He ditches a football game to go make out with her in the stands. Mm. And they live happily ever after. Did I miss anything?
Pretty much that's it.
Not one of my better plot summaries.
No, that
I'll
was
work
great.
On it.
No, it's okay. Really the material, so not you.
That's true. Not much to work with. Let's do some highlights, though. My first one is that there is just chock full of Valley references, which I kind of like. The earthquake, obviously, that was a dark twist, but the Northridge earthquake did happen. This could have happened, you know, in the Valley at that time. Mm-hmm. The Valley Diner that the family owns and takes over looks, you could throw a rock on Ventura Boulevard and hit like seven of these. So I like kind of like that. That's like where I kind of grew up going in high school. They reference the drought in the very beginning of the movie because the evil stepmom mm-hmm. likes to keep her lawn pristine and green. Also kind of sad that all these years later, we're like still in and out of droughts and still dealing doing with that, stuff. Yeah. Water. But I did like it. It was obviously some like writer that was living in LA, made it very like LA Valley specific. And I kind of appreciated mm-hmm. all the little nods to it. The other highlight that's much better is that Regina King works in the diner with Hilary Duff and then Fiona, the evil stepmom. And she acts as the fairy godmother to Hilary Duff. And she is such a warm, maternal presence. And not to get too mm-hmm. deep, but her character mirrors much more of like in real life when you kind of have some kind of fairy godmother role because she protects Hilary Duff. She nurtures yeah. Hilary Duff, takes her in when she has nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just kind of really, really appreciated it. And the two of them have like a really nice relationship in the movie as well.
That is great. Beautiful. I do love that. I also love that it's like, you know, Regina King is now a very celebrated, you know, Oscar winning actress. And that's one thing I love about these 2000s, you know, I guess teen blockbuster movies or teen movies that the number of now famous celebrated actors who are just, you know, trying to add to their freaking reel. And it's just, they're like these really fun cameos. Like, obviously, yeah. Regina King in this movie. You have, like, you know, Steve Carell in that Sleepover movie. There are tons of others, but that's the other one that, you know, comes to mind. Also, I love how they made the stepsisters. Like, clearly, they're always going to be, like, the antagonist sidekicks to the main stepmother. But I really like how they had... not only them, but also this mean girl, mean popular girl, Shelby, and that the stepsisters were kind of bumbling idiots, which, you know, again, they always are, but they worship mm-hmm. the more popular, eviler girl. And I was like, wow, what an interesting, I guess, plot twist, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I like that little added character.
Yeah, there is. I mean, the bar is very low, but there are a lot of like real world adaptions that kind of make more right. sense. Like that would happen in high school. Mm-hmm. These two bumbling idiots would worship whatever the most popular girl is. And right. then she also has this on and off relationship with the boy, Austin right. Ames, Chad Michael Murray's character. So it all kind of makes sense. They did a good job. What else?
I agree with Liz. I love the diner. And mm-hmm. I just love like the allegiance to like the 2000s teen movie tropes. Like you've got the diner where everyone hangs out. It's not always mm-hmm. a diner. Sometimes it's a coffee shop. Sometimes it's like, you know, somebody's house. But like, I just love having like that home base mm-hmm. where like, it's just where everybody goes. Every character in the movie shows up there at some point or another. Like, just love it. It works every time. And also in teen movie tropes, every high school movie should have the official school DJ. That was like such yes. a thing in like these 2000 movies where like there was like this, you know, instead of a narrator, it's like the high school. She does the announcements. She also like DJs and like does random like, I'm like, why? Yeah. She literally has a turntable like in the middle of this high school. I'm like, what are you doing? What is your role?
They're always like the alt kid or the emo kid, depending yeah. on the era, the scene kid. I loved yeah. it. Did you guys have That's that? Funny. I didn't. And it sounds like such a fun, cool job.
No, I mean, we had a radio station at my high school and we had like announcements and stuff, but we didn't have a school DJ. I don't think anyone did. Did anyone have this? That's not real.
I don't know. We had a guy who did announcements and sometimes he would say funny stuff, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But like that, it was, you know, very far. Yeah. And
I did the announcements of my senior year and I used to think I was hilarious and I was not, which is shocking, shocking to anyone listening to this.
You were born for podcasting, obviously.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
What's another highlight, Amelia?
Also, I very much enjoyed the soundtrack to this movie. You know, they had, they had a bunch of Hilary. I was looking at the soundtrack and the number of Hilary Duff songs they had on this. I mean, we thought J-Lo was being a little excessive with her one song at the end of the wedding planner, but Hilary Duff had like 20 songs. And it was weird because I could hear some of them, but I guess... I don't know if these were just added songs because I didn't think there were that many in the actual movie itself. But, you know, go off, Hilary.
Get that check. Yeah.
Yeah, get that check, girl. But, you know, they had Goo Goo Dolls. They also had Everlasting Love twice. which was iconic. Also interesting because if you remember, Lindsay Lohan's premiere starring role as Hallie and Annie also had the song Everlasting Love in the credits. So a little
synergy.
Interesting there. Yeah.
I also thought they had a really good end scene, which I'm now conflicted about. But the very end, Chad Michael Murray is in this, like, you know, big football game. And then he goes to Hillary Duff in the stands after, like, actually kind of like blowing her off in a big way in front of the entire school body, which is perhaps unforgivable. Sure. But anyway, comes into the stand and they have this really nice, lovely kiss. And then the rain falls. And I remember all these years later, like that scene, that kiss. But this brings us to our first low light, because Hillary Duff was 15 while filming this and Chad Michael Murray was 22.
Very tough.
Extremely tough, would not be done today. Also has aged the worst, obviously. We could put this in every category, but watching it now, knowing that, makes me not enjoy I will never like that scene again. I don't know why they did that, but obviously extremely uncomfortable at the time and still now. It's just really weird.
And he looks old. So like you could have, and we're going to talk about who was almost casting this role in a little bit, but like you could have easily cast a younger guy. You know, like I'm not saying don't cast Hillary Duff. I'm saying like cast another teenager. Like it's so easy. There are famous teenagers everywhere in 2004.
I'm sure Amelia wanted that because Amelia, what are your thoughts on Chad Michael Murray?
I just want to preface this that maybe I'm just programmed to dislike him because, you know, there was a whole thing about he starred on One Tree Hill and I didn't really watch that show, but apparently he cheated on Sophia Bush with Paris Hilton. That was the whole narrative. And I was like, no, that's not cool. But I don't know. Watching this, I was like, who is that? Like, as in, like, he's just a block and he's just there. He has the presence of a wet rug. And it just blows my mind that he had a legitimate career in the 2000s as like the boyfriend, quote unquote. And you could have substituted him with a tree, like, you know, one of the trees that Jürgen Teller was photographing people in front of. Like, I would have been the same thing. To me, at least. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but he's just there. He's handsome, but is he that handsome? Does he have any charisma? No. I'm sorry.
I feel like you'll enjoy this tidbit, Amelia. I was reading a BuzzFeed article about this movie, and it said, I don't know who on Chad Michael Murray's team paid them to write this part, but it said, Chad Michael Murray's character is more one-dimensional in the original script. The backstory of his father wanting him to be a college football player was expanded at Chad Michael Murray's suggestion. And I'm
guys!
Like, big thumbs up. Great
job.
That's like the... to frame that as like some pivotal whatever. Now he's like a 3D complex human being is like a bit of a stretch. They're not exactly in the same era, but Channing Tatum plays a similar kind of like sometimes dumb jock blunders, but then ends up okay and ends up making the right call. He is bursting with charisma.
Yes.
And chemistry. It can't, you know, there are actors who do it, and you're right. Chad Michael Murray, I don't think, is one of them.
Yeah. He also like has just real fuckboy energy, which like the beauty of the Channing Tatum energy is it's himbo energy. Like, you know, he has like a good heart.
Yes.
Even when he does dumb stuff and he has a beautiful face, but like, it's okay. There's like a heart of gold in there. Whereas like Chad Michael Murray just has like bad vibes. Like he, in like his villain sort of villainous moments or like at least like kind of like asshole moments in this movie, you're like, oh, like, I don't like that. And he is really hot and I get it. Like just staring at him like in person, I'm like, okay, like, whatever, I guess you look like a Hollywood movie star. But yeah, there's just nothing, there's nothing there that's working for me.
It's like very much how, you know, like Abercrombie and Fitch models are like, I can be an actor too. And it's like, no, you can't.
Alex Petty for energy.
Yeah,
and, Clint Eastwood's son.
Maybe if we watched One Tree Hill, we would have like some more emotional attachment to him, but I
don't think so.
my old roommate that I like used to talk about on this podcast does like an annual One Tree Hill marathon, and I had to sit through it last year where she would blast Gavin DeGraw like through my wall. And I just saw on Instagram stories that she just started her annual One Tree Hill marathon again. And I was like, thank God I'm gone. I'm
the
free.
The passing of time.
That's funny. So yeah, I will not be watching. I will not be watching One Tree Hill as research. I'm sorry.
That's really funny.
I can't.
All right, what's another low light?
a low light for me. I mentioned it earlier, but like, I just, part of Cinderella is like, you know, her dad's dead and like, you're sad about it. But like, she has so many other sad things about her life that like, you just kind of have to move on. And this movie establishes the dad like early on as like this huge person in her life. And like, she's this little girl and she's so happy with her dad and they're playing in the park and he's buying her things and like, they're sharing this joy and then he dies. And it's like, I just, this is supposed to be a lighthearted movie. And like, it is in many respects, but I just think it's like too dark to start out with the dad dying in a tragic accident, like, and actually knowing the dad before he dies. I just don't need that in the movie.
Agreed. It's just, it's a little intense because usually, you know, the choice is like, oh, he died of an illness or something, but it's like, no,
and
it's
a just
mystery
gone.
Illness.
You see a picture. You see a picture of him and it's not like a specific like event that actually killed people.
Right. It's like, did he fall into a giant crevasse? Like, this is very scary.
I need something more fantastical.
Yes, absolutely.
And less specific.
Like, that's what I'm imagining. It's very traumatic.
Right. I don't need to be thinking about how he died in an earthquake. I just want to move on to the actual story.
There are some chaotic scenes in this movie, including that one. There's, like, I kind of caught myself just being like, what the hell is happening? There's this one scene where the two evil step sisters go to the car wash, which Chad Michael Murray's family owns, and he's there all the time. And they're basically trying to pretend that they're Cinderella. They are the Princeton gal 818 to like win him over.
Right.
The two girls end up literally fighting on top of a vehicle and going through a car wash. Like, the two of them go through a car wash. It is the most chaotic scene I've seen in like recent memory. The two of them literally get the shit beaten out of them because, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just kind of was watching this, was like, just what is happening? Why did they choose to do that? I guess it's like physical comedy in some
right, like
weird
the zany,
world.
Zany, wacky comedy.
A bit too much.
Yeah. It's a bit much.
Yeah. Wait, did you guys watch The Nanny ever? Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, but one of the stepsisters is like the little girl in Fran.
That's
Drescher's
funny because I was thinking about how I had never seen either of them in anything before.
And
I was
like, okay.
Kind of unusual that like neither of the stepsisters were ever in anything again. So I guess that proves me wrong.
Well, Amelia, last thing they were in was Californication in 2014, but they're in The Nanny for a couple years. That's that's good for them. Okay.
Great.
Anyway, checks from that. Yeah, okay. Late.
So we say this again and again. We said this in the last Cinderella cringe mode. But she goes to this ball, this homecoming dance, where people are in costume, again, for some unknown reason. And she's just got her, you know, she's got these great bangs that, that were like in then. They look great. Yeah. It's like the classic Hillary Duff bangs.
Yeah.
She's wearing this dress. She's got like her hair all nice. And then her entire disguise is that she's got this little like Incredibles mask on. And that's it. And he sees her. And they've interacted at school before this. It's not like he doesn't know who she is. Like, which I could believe if like they'd never interacted, but like they make eye contact multiple times. They exchange like words outside. And then he walks up to her at this dance and is like, who are you? I've never seen you before. He's posting pictures like in the school, like mystery girl. He has like the outline of like her head. And is like, I must find, I'm like looking across the hallway at the girl with the identical bangs, like identical haircut.
Right.
It just stretches willful suspension of belief so far, which I know this whole movie does. Like, it's fine, but I was like, okay. All
but, like, come on.
Come on.
That's so true. Let's move on to what has aged the best and the worst. Worst, I gotta be maybe the most egregious one, is the AIM Comic Sans conversations. I think it struck a chord in all of us. We are of that time. And then I loved when they text and their little phone screens can only fit the five words at a time. And they're having this back and forth conversation, but the sentences are like, me too. And who are you? And it's like, there's no other room for anything else. And it's just so lovely. It takes me back to a simpler time. Hillary Duff is pressing like 45 buttons to get like one word out.
Right.
I just loved it.
Also, when instead of a shoe, she leaves her phone at the dance, he gets her phone. And then there's like no way to know whose it is. It's just like a brick. And
I didn't
she's
think
like,
about
it's locked. And I'm like, what? You can't tell whose phone it is? Like, you can't. There's no way to know.
It's actually really true.
It's true.
It's like, okay.
It's true.
Oh my God.
What else has aged the worst, Amelia?
I would say there's some, like, you know, 2000s humor that people could, you know, get away with back then, but not now, obviously, for good reasoning. There's also, like, casual homophobia early on when, you know, freaking Chad Michael Murray, of course, is like talking to her as, you know, Princeton girl, blah, blah, blah. And he says, if you're gay, I'll kick your butt, which is not only just so stupid.
She's
but,
like, haha, I'm not a guy. I'm like, okay, well,
yeah,
relax.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, like, really, yeah, thank you. And just also, who says that? If you're a guy, I'll kick your, like that, I don't, okay. That was lazy screenwriting too.
It was.
It was really homophobia was. And lazy screenwriting.
Yeah.
Two strikes. A couple things age the best. I guess maybe since we're so anti-Chad Montgomery, like maybe this aged the worst. I look forward to your thoughts. Rupert Grint of Harry Potter fame was originally cast as Austin. I got this. I watched this movie on Amazon. This came up on the side and I was like, holy shit.
What?
He was originally cast as Austin, but he had to drop out for Prisoner of Azkaban, the third Harry Potter movie. And as I was seeing this, there was a scene where, like, you first see Chad Montgomery and, like, he's slow motion, like, getting out of his car in the parking lot and, like, his blonde hair, like, catches the light and, like, everyone's slow motion, like, watching him. And I was just picturing it with fucking Ron Weasley getting out of a Jeep in slow motion. And
also,
the
character is supposed to be going to USC to play football right. that fall. And, like, that's the whole thing. But maybe he would have bulked up.
Like, I just have so many questions. Like, does he have red hair in this scenario? Like, does he have a British accent? Is he wearing a wig like he did in the third Harry Potter movie? Like, this was like the wig era. I just don't. Actually, I think the fourth movie was the wig era. But still, like, I just have so many questions.
He still looked like a child. Like a literal child in the third movie. I mean, what?
He could have been like the best friend. Like, that casting makes sense. Yeah. Like, the goofy best friend. Literally, like, maybe Amazon did me wrong, but like on the trivia.
This feels they might have.
You know, on Amazon, when like you watch a movie and like it comes up with all the like trivia on the side. Yeah. Like, literally, I took a screenshot of it. I was like, what the fuck? So, yeah, I have to say, I did not verify it beyond that. I just trusted Amazon. But yeah, that's insane.
I don't think you can trust Amazon anymore.
Maybe not. Maybe not anymore. Don't fact check that because I'm just going to continue with that headcanon until the end of time. And another thing that aged the best is the iconic meme at the end of the movie. Chad Michael Murray and his dad on the football field. His dad goes, you're throwing away your dream. Chad Michael Murray's like, no, dad, throwing away yours. Wow. And then he runs into Powerful. The stands to make out with Hillary Duff. And for some reason, the internet just loves that scene. I don't quite know why, but it's very overacted. So maybe that's why.
Yeah. TikTok has also picked up the laugh out loud of Hillary Duff. I don't know if you guys recognize that, but it's went around actually like earlier in quarantine, like last year. But it's a great sound. I actually didn't know that it came from this movie. And I was like, there you go.
Love that. Love when that happens.
Yeah. And then in general, Hillary Duff has aged the best in like every single possible way. Still extremely relevant, still got a kicking career. So happy for her. She's really stood the test of time all these decades.
She's great.
Yeah.
All right, let's pick our MVPs. Mine is got to be Jennifer Coolidge. We actually have not really talked about her in this discussion, so maybe I picked wrong. But
no, you're right. You're right.
I think she's just an iconic evil stepmom. This role and then her Legally Blonde role are like the role she was meant to play. She is that person. That person exists in real life, exists in the valley. And she was just like all-time bitch. You just like hated her with such a passion, which means she did her job well. And she just is like, I don't know, just great casting, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Totally agree. She's the worst. She's so great.
She's so funny.
Okay. Kate, who's your pick?
I put Regina King. I know Amelia already talked about her many strengths, but, you know, especially the Jennifer Coolidge scenes, like, and the stepsisters just get very, like, wacky and, like, silly and kind of over the top. And Regina King's just very grounding, like, a very grounding presence to this movie. Even, like, the very over the top sort of plot points that come up, I think she just, like, makes it all seem very realistic. It's just, like, keeps a level head. It's like, we're going to find you a costume. Like, we're going to get you to this dance. Yeah. Like, you're not going to get fired. I'll talk to your stepmom for you. And, like, just makes it all seem more realistic. Yeah. Like, just calms everyone down. Agreed. Just great. Love her.
Agreed. Amelia? Agreed. Yeah. I agree with both of you guys, actually. But, you know, just to create more content, I guess, if you will. I would say whoever milked three movies out of this franchise, congratulations. Because I haven't watched the other two movies. But it was funny because last week we were talking about it. And I think I mentioned, like, wasn't Lucy Hale in this? And then Kate said, no, I think Selena Gomez was. Turns out they both were in. And there was one with Selena Gomez and there was one with Lucy Hale. So there were three of these movies. And I just can't imagine them all being that different from each other. But
they're not. The other two are more, I've seen both of them somehow. No, so guys. I should not have corrected you because I have also seen the Lucy Hale one. The other two are more musical. Like the Selena Gomez one is like a lot about like dancing and like her Prince Charming is like a dancer. He's the guy, I think he's the guy that did vocals for Zac Efron in the first.
Drew Seeley.
Yeah, that guy. Oh, he's the guy in the Selena Gomez Cinderella story and like they're dancing and like singing, I think. And then in the Lucy Hale one, the Prince Charming is Cormac McLaggen from Harry Potter, who's also like in Bridgerton and he's in bunch of other shit. It's that guy. And and that is also about singing. Like her stepsister like wants to be a singer and like Lucy Hale is like doing the thing where she's like in the back singing for her stepsister and then like the curtain opens and it's Lucy Hale.
Tricky.
So yeah, so like it's more more musically focused.
I don't know about you guys. I can close the Cinderella canon if you guys are ready. Yeah. We can keep going with these movies. They're very cringy, I imagine. But
We can chat about it. They're all the same. They're pretty much all the same. We can let it lie.
Okay, great. And we only have one quick little question in the lightning round, which really speaks
to
how
important it's important
how uninspired this movie is. But on behalf of Princeton Gal 818 and Nomad, I think, what was everyone's screen names? And Kaya, if you have one, like we're all ears as well. So what were you guys' screen names?
Mine, this is a great question, by the way.
Thank you.
I really don't remember my AIM screen name. But I know that, remember, did you guys have Zangas? That journal?
No.
Okay, maybe, I don't know. Well, it was a big thing, and mine was, this is so embarrassing, French Fry 103, which, like, I don't even like French fries, like, that much. And I'm sure when I thought of it, I was like, wow, this is pretty cool name. So, great. Awesome.
People just did any, just threw shit at the wall with those. Yeah. Like, truly. There's no rhyme or reason to those screen names.
Yeah, I didn't do like AIM or anything. I think it was like before I was like allowed to like be on computers. So, but I remember I used to like go over to my friend's house and like she would do it and I would just like sit there and like watch her talk to boys on AIM.
Oh my God.
But my username when I was little for like shit like Neopets or like any of that was always like Volleyball Girl 89.
I love that.
Classics.
Yeah. Uninspired.
I lived on AIM. Like that was like the lifeblood of my middle school and high school communication. And mine was Born Actress 830. And
I have to know more.
Same.
I thought I was gonna be, I was like really into acting. Like I thought I was gonna be like a theater person. I don't know why. And now even though we do this podcast, I'm really quite shy and I don't like, I just now thinking about me like doing that and being that is really funny. But yes, I thought, I don't know what, Born to Act or I don't know.
I'm picturing you like on AIM with like all of your high school classmates who are like the children of famous actors being Born
Actress 830. That's true. I actually switched in later high school because that was quite lame. And I think I was Lizzie Do 88.
Cute.
But for middle school was Born Actress 830. And I think I still have some logins like with that AOL account.
That's amazing. Wow.
Anyway,
that's the worst is when like you have to like go back and log into something that you made in seventh grade and you have to like enter back into like your volleyball girl persona and like try to remember your password and like re-enter that mindset. That's traumatic. Kaya, what was yours? Do you have one?
Mine's too embarrassing to share.
Cannot be. That cannot be. What was it?
Oh God. Okay, fine. It was Cali 4, like number 4. Babe 96.
Cute. Oh. That's cute.
That's great.
Were you like the popular girl in middle and high school?
No,
that seems like a very popular kid's screen name.
I wasn't.
I love that.
Wow.
Also,
we should switch our Slack names to these for the rest of the day.
Yeah. You guys could see how like red my cheeks are right now. I can't believe I just exposed myself.
I love that. Oh my God. We should all submit middle school photos and then post our screen names. Just really put the face to the names.
Yeah. Good idea. Good idea. That's really
okay. Let's wrap this episode up with Tea Time's unanswerable questions. If you guys have questions for us, you know, our DMs are open and Amelia has to field them all. So sorry that I subject you to that all day, every day. Okay, Amelia, what's your unanswerable question?
Yes. So this is, I guess, a very musical kind of themed one. But Daft Punk, the French, I guess, electronic band duo, Right? I get this. Mm-hmm. Okay. They released a video that was like the end, and it was just like one of them blowing up in the desert, which is a little like, oh my God.
Very Daft Punk of them, to be honest.
A little apocalyptic, a little, you know, sad, I guess, melancholy. Anyway, so I guess they're, I don't know, I guess they're ending for the time being, but I don't know about you guys, but there was a time when I was like really into Daft Punk, and I remember, I think, you know, when iTunes, when you had your iTunes like playlist and you could toggle it so it showed you the songs by the number of plays.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And like, so they did the soundtrack to it's that Garrett Hedlund movie.
Tron.
Yeah. Legacy. And I, for a while, all of my top played songs were from the Tron Legacy soundtrack.
Oh my God.
It's a good soundtrack. So I know. So I was a little sad to see that they're ending. But does anyone have a favorite Daft Punk song?
Just Daft Punk makes me want to like fucking be, and I'm not even this person, but like be surrounded by thousands of sweaty people jumping up and down. I like One More Time. That it's just a song that like freaking makes you want to be in a very sweaty, very crowded mosh pit. And I miss human connection, maybe. But anyway, Kate, do you have one? Are you a Daft Punk girl?
Genuinely, like, could not name a Daft Punk song if you did $1 million. Sorry. Well,
do you know, like, they've collaborated with, like, you know,
I know the one that they did with The Weeknd. That's all I know.
Oh, that's a good one. That's actually a good one.
What's yours, Amelia? What's your favorite Tron Legacy song?
Wow. Well, honestly, I love all and every Tron Legacy song. So I'm just going to go with that entire soundtrack because it's good.
Okay, yeah, I'm so happy that you included that in your question. Like, that's special. Was not expecting that.
I just really love that soundtrack.
Okay, last question for me is Billie Eilish's new documentary is just released today. You can perhaps watch it. I might tune in. It's okay. On Apple TV Plus. It's Billie Eilish, The World's a Little Blurry. It reveals a lot about her. I will probably end up watching it because I like Billie Eilish's music, but it's 2 hours and 21 minutes long, which is really flipping long. There's even an intermission in the movie. Yeah.
Okay, and I'm sorry. I don't have time for that.
Maybe it's like we who are just the more casual fans. I guess like I was trying to think about this and I was like, maybe Kate, if there was some 2 hour and 20 minute long Harry Styles doc when you were a certain age, maybe you would have like eaten that up. But it feels really, really long, especially she's like 19. Like there's not a whole life to go through yet, but maybe it's really heavy on her music and she does like full songs. Not sure. What are your guys' thoughts?
I mean, I feel like she has a lot to say. I feel like she has like a very strong point of view and like perspective and like puts a lot of that into her music. So like from a certain point, I'm like, okay, like it's, I feel like I would be learning more from her than I would like an artist who like, you know, sings other people's songs and like, which is fine. Like, you know, but I also am like an intermission is simply too much. Nothing should have an intermission. Yeah. I don't. And plus like, you know, she has such like little quirky things in her songs where like some of them are like overly, you know, like she puts The Office in one of them or like it's like an outtake from her recording that she's like decided to throw in. So I'm like, maybe sometimes like she doesn't know what to cut, you know? So maybe there's a little bit like, you know, just silly recording sessions where I'm like, okay, I don't necessarily need to be watching this, but I think she's very charming. And I do want to know more about her. So I'll probably
Are there artists that you guys would watch and like really consume 2 hours and 20 minutes of? I feel like if Billie Eilish was your favorite person, absolutely, this would be a dream come true. So I guess I should think of it like that.
Yeah. Also, though, sometimes I feel like if you're that level of a fan, like this is how I felt about the Blackpink documentary on Netflix. Like I already knew a lot of it. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of times it's for people who don't already know all this stuff. So it's like a lot of like basic level information that's like supposed to be, you know, for the general public, but then like only a little bit of stuff like for the hardcore fans who are the people that actually like want to sit through this and have been looking forward to it. So I think it's tricky because it's hard to get both of those groups interested in something like this. But yeah, I think Billie Eilish has hidden depths. So I think it'll probably be interesting and I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, me too. Oh, okay. Wow. Report back, please.
I will.
Perhaps. Okay. That's it for this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Callie for Babe, our producer. I'm Born Actress 830.
I'm Volleyball Girl 89.
And I'm French Fry 103.